and welcome to a special Comics Burst from the Full Force podcast, sponsored by Distant Planet Comics and Collectibles, where we take an in-depth look at the newest G.I. Joe comics news and related titles of the week with me as your host, Chris Cobra Provides McLeod, aka Diagnostic 80. Joining me on this episode, there are a lot of sirens going on, which I'm not sure if you can hear that at the moment. I'm leaving that in. Sirens are staying in. Joining me on this episode to discuss his current ongoing G.I. Joe comic is Paul Aller. So without further ado, let's get stuck into this comics burst. Yes, that's right, we've somehow managed to convince the current G.I. Joe ongoing writer Paul Aller to come back for more. The series is up and running now and into issue 5 with 6 just around the corner, so we thought it would be a good time to grab some Paul, not some Paul, to grab all of Paul for some more intel on this fascinating comic series. Firstly, thanks for jumping on again, Paul, mate. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. This is something that I kind of wanted to do after we obviously spoke initially, which was way back in the day before the comic hit the shelves. You couldn't really get into loads of detail. You did give us quite a lot though, which was amazing. Obviously now we're at this stage. I mean, my first question obviously is, when are we going to see Nurse Road Pig? Paul had no idea I was going to ask that question, so...
I feel like Nurse Road Pig would be an inevitable disappointment.
I think
Nurse Road Pig works best in the imagination.
Actually, that's a good point. That's a good point. Kind of like, never revealing the actual... revealing anything about Nurse Road Pig would be amazing.
Yeah. If and when we loop back around to the Dreadnoughts, which, obviously is something I'd like to do, then,
let's talk about the Dreadnoughts, because that was actually interesting. Yeah. Obviously, I know we're starting at issue 5 here, working our way backwards.
Sounds good.
But obviously, that's an issue that Brian and I have just actually recorded Comics Burst for. It will be out by the time this goes out. You haven't heard that Comics Burst, but I can spoiler alert and say that Brian and I loved it, and both gave it 5 potatoes, because that's how we rate things, thanks to the Irish contingent in our team. So, and that was their decision. So, so basically,
it's the Irish thing. Interesting. Yes. I thought it was an army reference. Like
No, it's not that good. Unfortunately, it's because it's because Paddy and Brian are both Irish, and they thought potatings would be funnier than ratings, which they are.
Yes.
But in any case, Dreadnokistan, take us through your idea about what you wanted the Dreadnoks to be in this series, because it's not your usual evil biker gang, is it?
It's not, yeah. One thing I want to do with this book is that a lot of the factions that would normally have been aligned, that are normally aligned with Cobra, I want to do more interesting things with them, and make them more just like a jumble of different resistance groups and, basically just different factions that can play off against each other. So with the Dreadnoks in particular, they have such a wonderful commitment to anarchy and to just living the life they want to live.
Doing whatever the knock they want,
yes. And so I was thinking of ways to like incorporate that into this world, and it made sense that like we'd made references to Indianapolis being a city that had been somewhat destroyed and emptied out, so it just made sense to make them the remnants still living there and, living the life they want and doing whatever the knock they want. And just, it's a very different take with everything in this G.I. Joe. I'm really trying to stay true to the original intent of the characters while also, thinking like, how would they exist in this different environment?
I don't think it's necessary that they have to be aligned with Cobra, but I like the fact that in the last issue, it's not that there's a divide between G.I. Joe and the Dreadnoks necessarily, but because obviously the Dreadnoks go through some, a pretty torrid time and lose a lot of their own kind of people, you get the idea that, maybe they're going to be looking to become a stronger force with the remaining crew that are left. Maybe they want to be, maybe more weaponized, or maybe more, more militarized, I should say, to, live in this world that is now the reality for them.
Yeah, I definitely saw this as more of a, I don't want to say origin story, but something akin to that. Especially because like most of the people they lost were like the older people, the people who were like a little less militarized, a little less outlaw. So, you know, they're a leaner, they're a much leaner, more familiar group now. And so, yeah, I think the next time we see them, A, they're not going to be as accommodating to G.I. Joe as they were this time.
Yeah.
I think you're going to see them living a life much more similar to what you're used to seeing. Definitely.
Yeah. And I think that's, it's almost like a very natural thing that you can see happening in that issue as well, which I thought was really cool. Another thing about the Dreadnoks is kind of Zartan, his character and his origin. There's a real interesting way of bringing Zartan into the fray. And I love the fact that he's from Sierra Gordo. So it's got that homage to the made up country in the Marvel, A Real American Hero universe. Mm-hmm. The fact that he was a kind of diplomat, or like a, you know, was in kind of intelligence within the Sierra Gordon or Gordian government, and then he's in Indianapolis when the first massacre happens and ends up staying there to almost takes the opportunity, doesn't he, to build a new life.
Yeah, absolutely. You pretty much nailed it.
I realize there's no question in that question, by the way.
And I will say, I love all the made-up cities and countries come from Real American Hero, and I've also been making up some of my own that we'll see being rolled out in future issues. So yeah, it'll be a lot of fun, and we'll be going back to some of the ones. I'm not going to spoil anything. Say that, like issue 8. I think the solicit says Eastern Europe, and issue 8 takes place in Transcarpathia.
Oh, fantastic! Fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, Zartan again, just the same thing that I really wanted to, you know, see him through a new filter, a different filter.
A lot more background than we actually have on the original Zartan, interestingly enough, as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not ruling out the possibility that he has some of those same shapeshifting doppelganger abilities. That it wouldn't be like as it wouldn't be done the same, obviously.
Yeah. I figured there'd be something about his personality, like especially being in intelligence for Sierra Gordo, that there'd be some sort of like disguise element that he might utilize or something along those lines.
He also, there was a line in his file card that got cut by Hasbro.
Oh yeah, schizophrenic one, the paranoid schizophrenic thing.
Oh no, you're talking about the old one. Yeah.
Sorry.
But I mean in the file cards that I wrote for this book.
Oh right, awesome. So yeah, you're actually, this is art imitating art, by the way.
That's true. I didn't think about that. But no, I had a the file card talks about how he comes from a very prominent Sierra Gordian family.
Yes.
And I had a line in there that said that his family was the subject of a multi-generational magical realism novel by Gabriel Garcia Marquez called The Rooster Wears Many Faces.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah.
And I think Hasbro obviously cut that because Gabriel Garcia Marquez is a real person. They probably had, you know, concerns about his estate having taken issue with us.
Yeah, using it.
Making up a fictional book for him. So I was bummed that happened at the last second, so we didn't have time to be like, if we take out his name, can we leave it in? But yeah, because that was intended as a little hint to the fans that may be a possibility down the road that we'll explore that. So,
that's fantastic. I'm taking that as a world exclusive, reading between the lines, full force exclusive.
Until I tweet it tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly.
To cut you off before.
Exactly. No, do it. Just screw me over completely. I love that. So yeah, and again, like that. So the universe that you're building, I mean, the Dreadnoks is just a small part of it, but the universe already after just 5 issues is so vast, and I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that the issues really move around the place; they don't stay in the same place for very long. And I really, really love that about the comics so far. We've got this, you know, you're starting to see character development. Obviously, there was a really big bit of character development in Major Blood in that one issue, which was just. Brian and I absolutely adored that one. It was just so cool to see him. In a way, you're kind of thinking, you're kind of on his side in a little bit, but then you realize, actually, no, he's a bastard as well. Like, he's done some horrible things too. So these characters are so interesting and like difficult to like just, you know, openly say, this is a good guy, this is a bad guy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's been interesting seeing like the reaction people have had to the different characters because of that. Like in that same issue, we introduced Laura Demon, the new Cobra operative. Yeah. And a lot of people seem to think that like that was intended as like a sympathetic portrayal, or that, like, you know, he's bringing this, you know, like it's all people saying, Joe's struggling to defect to G.I. Joe. And like I I see her as being pretty amoral.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was like her file card made reference to like the idea that she like pushes down her own goals and morals in service of the organization she works for. And people are like, oh, well, that's, you know, maybe she's going to be a good guy. Like, no, that's, to me, that's pretty evil.
Yeah,
so
she's following the evil path, no doubt.
Yeah, yeah. So it's interesting to see. But anyway, my point is, I like that. I like that people are having like different takes on the characters, even than what I expected.
Because I
did try to make them.
I mean, it starts off with Major Blood cutting someone's throat. So like you're kind of.
You
it's not like you're starting off on the fact that, you know, you don't have sympathy for Major Blood, for example.
Yeah.
But there is that thing of him, like, you hear that information that, you know, his team was wiped out and that kind of thing. So he's got an axe to grind as well, which is really interesting. I loved the back and forth with him and Mindbender. I think that is just brilliant how much of a, like, hilarious repartee they have. And then to have Mindbender say it out loud as a joke in a conversation was just the piece de resistance on that. I thought that was hilarious.
That was a lot of fun, yes.
Real fun. I mean, and how, I think it's coming through as well with the art, because I think, you know, Chris seems to be having a massive load of fun with this. Like, you can really see it in the artwork. And obviously Brittany Peer's colors are just gorgeous, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's overall you're building a really cool like universe. I mean, how important is that for you to have this established universe for people, or do you want to keep it quite open so you can keep kind of developing it and moving it and so on and so forth?
No, I definitely want to keep it open. Like, that was absolutely something that was the plan from the beginning, was to, you know, do these one shots and keep it moving, keep bringing in different characters. Yeah, I was like surprised when people saw me as like replacing Duke with Tiger, like, you know, he's killing Duke and now Tiger is the new main character. It's like, I never saw Tiger as being a main character.
Yeah,
like, there's no main character in this book. And like, I don't think that like killing one character who's like at the top of the organization and bringing in like a recruit at the very bottom of the organization as much of a replacement.
Yeah. Not just but I've seen Jinx, I've seen Cover Girl, I've seen Rock and Roll, I've seen like loads more characters, more than I've seen Tiger in the series so far. So that, again, it's kind of a weird thing to say, like, you know, he's a new main character. It's like he's a character in effectively a team book, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I can see how people would jump to that assumption, you know, just from the first issue. But it was definitely the plan from the beginning, was that this would not be a book that had any specific main character. And that we have a core team, but even there, like, I think, you know, in the first two arcs, the core team is probably in about half the issues.
Yeah.
So,
and thanks again for including Lightfoot. And I know you did that just for me. That's a joke. That is a joke, everyone. Paul wrote this issue way before I got anywhere near it. So, that's still amazing, though. And for him, again, to have a really cool role in that issue with the bridge was just fantastic. And
that was a lot of fun. Yeah.
I loved how he was kind of like, you know, setting the charges underwater whilst bemoaning the whole fact he had to do it. I just thought it was really funny.
And it's not an easy job.
No,
that's not fun.
It's not like he's going to go under there and go, this is cool. I'm really happy I'm involved in this scenario. Yeah, you're not. You're going to be really pissed off. But no, again, another really interesting, really fun issue. And something, do you have much to say or do in the art kind of style and layouts and visual aspects? Are there any moments when you say, Chris, I would like to see this, not necessarily in designs, but like in the way that the scene plays out? Do you give him a lot of instructions of what to do, or is Chris kind of taking your writing and doing what he wants with it effectively?
Not a lot. I think that Chris and I have worked together so much at this point that I kind of like know what to expect.
Sure.
You know, that we kind of like almost have like a similar storytelling brain now. There have been times where like I've had an idea of what to do visually, but I've kind of kept it to myself because, you know, I don't, it's his job, you know, and he's much better than I am.
Totally.
And then he'll like do exactly what I was thinking anyway. So I'm like, oh, all right, cool.
Well, I only mention it because there's been a couple of amazing panels. There was one scene where Frontier kicks open the truck door when he's being like stopped at the truck stop, jumps out of the truck, runs down onto the bridge, and he's getting shot at, jumps off the bridge, and then you get these amazing, like, it's like one panel separated by three kind of rectangles, and him in the different positions of that fall off the off the bridge, kind of going into the water. And I just thought that was so cool and original and different and fun. I really thought that was cool. So that the reason I mentioned that is because I thought, was that something that maybe you had thought of doing, or is that all Chris?
Oh, that was all Chris. Yeah. Okay.
We'll have to get Chris on the show and stop talking to you, I think, won't we?
That'd be great, yeah. basically, if you go, wow, that was really cool, I loved that, that was almost certainly Chris. We do issue 6, which comes out in a few weeks, operates mostly on a 9-panel grid, and that was something that we discussed and worked out. But like, yeah, a lot of writers tend to use a 9-panel grid as like a way to like flex their muscles and show off a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And this, it was really just a matter of practicality.
Right.
That the issue cuts back and forth between a mission and scenes of the team being interrogated or debriefed about the mission.
Yeah.
And so a 9-panel grid was an easy way to like create very dense pages where we could get a lot of that in. And yeah, Chris just absolutely nailed it. And Brittany does an extraordinary thing with the coloring where like it's just a completely different coloring scheme between the two.
Some people would think that's a very simple thing to do. In actual fact, the balance of getting two different like coloring styles on the same page to signify a change in scene is actually really, really difficult, and there's a real subtle way of doing it. And Brittany, again, I have to give her a massive props because she does amazing work with that kind of flipping back in. It happened in the Dreadnoks scene where you've got the Dreadnoks issue where you've got Zartan and Stalker are talking to each other in the garden, and it's that nice autumnal, nice warm tones. The next page is Buzzer and Jinx, and they're on the bikes, and they're in that kind of initiation, and it's that kind of much colder blues and all kind of stuff. But the balance is just amazing.
Yeah, she just does an extraordinary job of, like you said, like balancing different things and making them work really well. Issue 7 takes place over the course of like a year and a half.
Wow.
And I really look forward to seeing like what she does with, you know, basically moving us through the seasons, through the years, over the pages. That'll be really, really exciting.
Well, we know that fall's just going to be all browns and reds and stuff, so it's done already. Easy. Summer's going to be just sunny, so it's going to be yellow. I've done it for you. Winter's going to be dark. Yeah, wow. There you go.
Don't
just, you know, cut her loose. I'll do all the colouring. It's easy. I'll use crayons, though. Is that all right?
That's perfect.
Okay, good. I'm kidding. Brittany, you're doing an amazing job if you are listening.
Oh, yeah. She's not going to listen to
She's
this.
Not going
to.
She doesn't give a shit.
No.
Of course,
she's got better things to do.
Yeah, she's got work to do. She's got to colour all your comics. In terms of the process, I take it 6 is done and dusted, and that's heading, that would be in the kind of printing kind of process right now. Is that the case? Or
yes, it is the case.
Yeah, and then I guess 7 is still in the process of creation, is that correct?
Yes, 7, 8, and 9 are all being drawn right now because we have guest artists.
Oh, wow. Okay, who have you got? What guest artist do you have in?
So Chris is doing 7,
yeah,
which is a flashback issue dealing with Scarlet during a time when she had just recently left the military. And can I take a moment to talk a little more about issue 7 right now?
Of course you can.
I wasn't planning on it, but so I'm actually really excited about issue 7 because, yeah, basically it's a flashback issue about Scarlet going through some rough shit after coming back from wartime.
Do any characters that may have been killed off early in the comic appear?
Yes.
Oh,
okay.
Good.
Yes. So Duke is helping her through it.
Amazing.
When he can, because he also has other things to do around the world. Because it's a flashback issue, it also takes place against the backdrop of Cobra's rise to power.
Oh, right. Cool.
And so, yeah, it was I'm so proud of the issue because like we just researched the heck out of it. We had a couple of really wonderful folks read the script and provide notes for us. One of them was Dwayne France, who runs a website and podcast about mental health for veterans. And he is a combat veteran himself.
Wow.
And he just gave us some extraordinary notes. And then we also had a couple folks, I don't have their names at hand, unfortunately, but we had a couple folks from the Department of Veterans Affairs Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder Center.
Yeah.
Who read through and again gave us some really wonderful notes, and also said some really nice things about it. Basically said that we got it more right than most folks do, which was very very heartening to hear because we really did put a lot of work into getting it right. Not sensationalizing it, but also not shying away from the reality.
Well, you can't. That's not
of what a lot of vets go through.
That's not something you can just half is it really, like,
you, right? Yeah.
And it's very commendable that you guys have gone, well, that you've gone to so much trouble to make sure that, you know, you're doing the right thing there. And I think, yeah, that's a very, very honorable thing.
Well, thank you. And yeah, I mean, so far, like, the art is still being drawn, but, like, so far in terms of the script, like, it's definitely, like, more people have read this script than any other script I've ever written.
Yeah.
Between the normal folks who read it, and then also Dwayne and the folks at the PTSD Center for the VA, and then also, because of the nature of it and the subject matter, a whole bunch of folks at Hasbro.
Wow.
Have read it as well. And the response we've gotten for it has just been, like, uniformly very positive, which terrifies me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but yeah, I think it might be something really special. I can't wait for it to come out. I really think that, people are going to get something out of it. I hope. Yeah. And, but it's scary because it is like, it's a story of someone not recovering from, but like getting help for PTSD over a year and a half of her life. And it takes place over 20 pages of comic, you know?
Yeah.
And also, like I said, charts Cobra's rise to power in the background as well. So it's a lot. Like, it's a dense comic.
Yeah,
and
this is going to be impressive, I think. Yeah.
It's also a very people talking to each other comic, you know? Like, it's not your typical G.I. Joe comic. There are no action set pieces. I think there's a couple of panels where there's gunplay, but it's like a cutaway to what's happening with Cobra or like on the news, that kind of thing. Like,
yeah,
the main characters aren't involved in any sort of like action or combat. It's like, instead of the silent interlude, it's like the talkie interlude.
it's the gobby interlude, is what I would call
it.
No, that's exactly. Really cool, really interesting as well. Definitely something that I'm very, very excited to kind of see before you release it. That's a joke, by the way. but yeah, that's awesome. So how have you found that? How did you find that process? Was that a difficult process to go through for yourself? I mean, what was it something that you were, I mean, you clearly kind of concerned about, you know, how that might be kind of seen after the fact, especially the fact you kind of had so many people look at it. Was that a process that, you know, challenged you?
It was, yeah. I mean, it also took me a long time to write. Like, thankfully, I knew it would, so I got ahead on the issues before it. And even then, like, it definitely took me longer to get in than, you know, than probably would have been ideal. And thankfully, it didn't affect the schedule. It just, you know, I wasn't as ahead of the game as I'd like to be. And thankfully, Bobby was like really patient about it, and they all understood what was going on. But then after I was done with it, like, I had to again hustle up on the next few issues as well.
Yeah,
which thankfully was, you know,
so you just rushed the other ones, is what you're
saying. In my wheelhouse. I was gonna say,
yeah, just rush the other ones.
As I was saying, thankfully they were a little more in my wheelhouse, so yeah. I was able to do them a little bit faster. I mean, it doesn't take me a full month to write a script, so
yeah.
You know,
do you write every single panel detail down to the kind of, is that how you write these, or do you write like a script of a certain length that you, over experience and time, you've kind of found that that's roughly the kind of amount that you can deal with, and then again send it off to Chris and then he does his thing? Or is it a case of, you know, you might do more Larry style things where he kind of does very vague descriptions of maybe what happens, and then it's done? Like, I mean, how, take me through that process a little bit if you could.
I've never seen one of Larry's scripts, but it sounds like what you're describing is what in the industry,
like,
they
Marvel
call
style,
they call Marvel style. Yeah, and yeah, full style. So no, I do full style.
Okay.
Once in a very long while.
Is it like page one, panel five, that kind of thing, or are you just saying,
yes,
like, okay,
yeah,
wow,
it is. I mean, at the top of each page I'll say how many panels are on the page, then I describe what's in every panel. But again, like, Chris always has the option to go
to kind of
off,
yeah,
track,
yeah.
And he usually discusses that with me. And when we talk about issues 8 and 9, I mentioned, like, the artist on issue 8 really, like, did her own thing and brought some really interesting things to it layout wise
oh, brilliant.
But yeah, I do full script, and then Chris, you know, because like, again, Chris and I have, like, been working together for like 5 years now, and we're good friends. We're in pretty close contact while he's working on the script, that he'll, like, ask me any questions he has along the way, and we'll discuss anything he wants to do. And yeah, I mean, usually when I say we'll discuss it, he says, like, you know, would you be cool with me doing this instead? I'm like, yep. So
that's a quick discussion.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's that's how we do that. But yeah, no, and for issue 7, like, again, it was tough because it is so dense, and it like cuts between scenes and between timelines very quickly. And you know, every time a new scene begins, we have a date on the page so that you can like track the progress of it over the year and a half that it takes place in.
That's awesome.
And there's like one page where I think we cover like 6 months or something in that one page. So yeah, it's an interesting book. Yeah. But yeah, so that's issue 7.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, we have guest artists issue 8 and 9. Oh, speaking of guest artists, I should say, because we, especially when we were talking about that Mindbender blood scene.
Yes.
That was actually Nico Walter, so I just wanted to give him props.
Big shout out to Nico, in the
blood issue. He did a really fantastic job with that as well.
He liked our review so much that he sent us a commissioned Snake Eyes piece as well, which I thought was amazing. So big shout out to Nico. Lovely thing to do.
Oh, that's cool. That's really awesome. Yeah. So yeah, so issue 8, like I said, which takes place in Transcarpathia, centers around a couple of characters whom I don't want to name because we're thinking of doing, like I told you, we're thinking of doing like a little contest thing.
Brilliant.
Of, you know, showing people the first page and saying like, can you name these two characters?
Yeah, yeah.
And like maybe giving like a signed copy of the book too. I guess we have to do that now that I've said all that. But so I just committed myself to that.
Brilliant.
But the artist is, I'm not sure how to pronounce her last name, but it's Emma Viacelli. Hopefully somewhat close. Yeah, she's British, but you know, I don't hold that against her.
How dare you?
Yeah, she's doing a really fantastic job with it. And like, she has a very unique layout style, and she's also a writer. So I think she's like done a lot of most of the things she's drawn, like she's written herself.
Hasn't she done one of the covers for the issue 6 coming out as well?
She did, yes.
I thought I'd seen you post that like today or yesterday, the split down the middle, the kind of Jinx and Scarlet cover, which looks really cool.
Yeah, that was her. Yeah, absolutely. So because her layout style is so unique, I like every artist I work with, you know, I'm cool with them, you know, breaking away from the script. But with her especially, I was like, you know, really feel free to make this your own.
Awesome.
And she did. Like, there are a lot of pages in the book where like it was written as like a 5-panel page and it'll be like an 8 or 9-panel page.
Nice.
And she's just really, really does exquisite wonderful things with the pacing, which is great because it's like this and the issue is like this basically like espionage based f***ed up romance.
Brilliant.
So yeah. Oh yeah, and I can say that like this isn't one of the two main characters, but Chuckles is also in it. And
oh,
so
brilliant.
So fantastic to be able to write Chuckles and have him, of course, hanging out in Eastern Europe wearing a Hawaiian shirt.
Oh man, I mean, he is
not give a
he is a fan favorite. I think he's amazing. Yeah, that's awesome that he's going to be included.
Yeah, he's not in it much, but I think that like what we do have in there with him, I think people really dig.
That's
so
fantastic.
Yeah.
And did you say issue 9 has guest artists as well?
Yes. And it's also been solicited, so I can talk about this as well. Issue 9 is being drawn by Ryan Kelly.
Oh, brilliant. I loved his cover for issue 5, I think it was.
Yes.
The Stalker and the Vipers in the kind of, it's like in Indianapolis in that kind of, what do you call it, alleyway. Really, really cool.
Yeah, Ryan is like one of my favorite artists, and he has been for many years. So it's so exciting to have him on this. And he's also a big G.I. Joe fan, going back, I think, you know, to his childhood, I believe. Like, don't, you know, quote me on that if you see him or anything. But
so
but yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure he's like a lifelong Joe fan.
Great.
And so yeah, he's just, I've only seen his layouts so far, and they're just like, just from the layouts, I'm like, this is going to be a good freaking issue. This is going to be gorgeous.
I can imagine.
And that issue is, hold on, hey, no, you're okay. Don't bark. Yeah, good boy. Good boy.
Just to tell the audience there, Paul is talking to his dog. He's not talking to me.
No.
Okay. I'm not a good boy.
Okay. Yeah, so issue 9 is about Tunnel Rat.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, we've seen the cover. That's very cool.
Yeah, and it's an issue about basically Tunnel Rat is the last survivor of a mission in South Asia, a country that I made up.
I'm pretty sure South Asia exists, though, Paul.
It's basically like in the same way that you can kind of trace most of Larry's countries to like the real world equivalents.
Yeah.
This is basically Kathmandu, but the geography is a little different than what Kathmandu is. So I pulled a Larry and just made up a country called Cigar Mandu.
Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah. So that's where he is. And also because it's Tunnel Rat, he's like underneath the city. And I didn't want to like, I'm sorry, Kathmandu is the city, obviously, the country is Nepal.
Yeah.
So, But yes, I made up both the city and the country. I can't remember what I called the country, but the city is called Skarmandu. But the other reason I did that is because I didn't want to like have to research like what Kathmandu's actual sewer situation is. So, but anyway, none of that's important. I'm rambling. Tunnel Rat is the last survivor of the mission. He has to make it to the rendezvous point, and he's being pursued by vipers and bats.
That sounds amazing.
Underground, and also fighting off his own sense of hopelessness after seeing, you know, literally 9 of his comrades get killed.
Ooh, are we talking named Joes, or are we talking the kind of classic comic fodder where you throw in a guy called like Sprocket and Trevor and that kind of thing, or are we talking named Joes?
No, they're all named. And they're all named, and we see them all die.
Oh my goodness me, that's gonna be huge.
Yeah, I just I mean, we're not talking like a bunch of A-listers. We're talking like a couple B-listers and a lot
of the B's and C's, man.
Unless one of them is your favorite character, in which case they are an A-lister.
Exactly. That's the thing. I mean, one of my favorites is Lightfoot, for goodness sake. So I'm really happy he's in, like, you know, he's in the comic as some asshole who doesn't like doing underwater demolitions. Mm-hmm. But no, that's amazing, man. That's really, I can't wait to read the list of Joes that succumbed.
Mm-hmm. And I will say that of the ones we kill off, none of them are in the original 13, but there is at least one who is a very early Joe that we very quickly dispatch. But no, like, so most of the issue is focused on Tunnel Rat, but we're doing a thing where basically you see like one panel flashbacks to how he lost the rest of the team along the way.
Wow.
And yeah, I'm excited about it, because it's just this really brutal, savage issue of Tunnel Rat just fighting like hell for survival while all the time feeling like he's not going to survive this. You know, like he's gonna go down fighting, and I won't tip off whether he makes it to the end or not, but it's, I think it's going to be a good issue.
Oh, mate, I cannot wait for those. I've just been like, just so excited to read the comic every time it comes out. And I'm not just saying that because you're on the show. I'm kind of saying it because I am in contact with you a lot, and and I don't want, we're now, Brian and I have painted ourselves into a corner where we can't give anything lower than 5 stars or 5 potatoes. So
I know, I'm wondering, like, if issue 7 comes out, I know, believe me, but if issue 7 comes out as well as I'm hoping it will, I don't know what you're going to do. I feel like
we'll have to add a few potatoes. In fact, Brian often says a sack of, or like 60 or something like that, and then it throws everything off anyway. But no, that's...
Well, I didn't know that. Now I feel like it's no big deal. Oh, yeah, it's 5 potatoes.
Our five potato ratings are about as good as, you know, electoral votes. Anyway, in Florida. Anyway, I will move away from that aspect of life right now, and just quickly. Obviously, again, like I said, it's an amazing comic. It is. One of those ones, again, that's building this really incredible universe, so rich in characters. I mean, you even have the ability here to kind of, like you say, to kind of knock off like 9, you know, named Joes. You still have 300 or something other characters you can like slot in. So are there any...
Exactly.
Are there any other... Are we going to be seeing any new characters coming into this issue that you haven't mentioned already, that maybe you can or cannot mention at the moment?
Not really. Well, you mean like new...
Yeah, like new for the teams. Are any of those going to be changed a little bit, or are we going to get any new characters come in, other than obviously the Tunnel Rat one, which you've mentioned?
Okay, I wasn't sure if you meant new to the franchise or just new to this particular book.
New to the comic, yeah.
Yeah, well, like I said, issue 8, sorry, I lost track of my numbering for a while. The two main characters are both...
they're new, aren't they? Yeah,
folks
cool.
Folks who are new to the comic.
Chuckles,
yeah. Yeah, other than that, not until the end of the second arc, which is as far as I have plotted out so far. But then, like, obviously after that, we definitely will. Oh!
Is the one major character that maybe hasn't been mentioned at all yet.
that guy. Do people care about that guy?
Apparently, he's...
I don't know. I mean...
I hope the audience know we're talking about, obviously Downtown. I'm just kidding. Yes. We're not talking about Downtown. We're talking about Snake Eyes. Can I say his name, or is it like Voldemort?
No, you can say his name. That's okay. That's cool. That's cool.
Any plans for the big man in there?
Who can say? Who knows?
Brilliant.
Issue 6 is the end of the first arc. Now that I think about it, I suppose that would be a cool way to end the arc. Damn, I should have thought about that.
I'm going to be keeping my eyes peeled, put it that way, to see what happens. Paul, mate, thank you so much for jumping on to chat about the comic. I really appreciate it, mate.
No problem. Well, hey, can we talk about the fact that the first trade is coming out?
Absolutely. Go for it.
The first trade is coming out.
Done. There you go. Next. No, that's great.
So it's called G.I. Joe World on Fire.
Oh, brilliant.
It was going to be in bookstores. They wanted to like differentiate it from the previous G.I. Joe issues. So yeah, it's G.I. Joe World on Fire Volume 1, and it comes out on June 16th. So if you have been on the fence about this book, if you have not had a chance to check it out yet, then that would be a really great book to pick up. And it has the first 6 issues in it, which will take you all over the world, all kinds of different exciting missions, and it'll just be a really cool, fun romp. And yeah, I mean, so like I know that you have a lot of G.I. Joe fans who listen to the show but are not reading the book, and yeah, I would just encourage you to check it out, because I know that like I obviously, like, since I'm writing the thing, I think it was pretty good from the beginning. but I do know that like the feedback I've heard from a lot of fans is like they feel like it didn't really like get going until like the 3rd or 4th issue. So, you know, even if you checked out the first issue and were sort of on the fence, like I would encourage you to jump back in, because I think you're gonna dig it.
I have to agree. I think it's brilliant. And again, I'm not just saying that. If you listen to any of our comic bursts where Brian and I talk about the comics, then you'll know that we've been absolutely raving about this since it came out. And it really is awesome. And again, you know, if you're looking at it thinking, you know, you don't want to like it because it's not your original G.I. Joe, I mean, it doesn't have to be as well. That's the other thing. Like, you know, we have plenty of other things for us in that regard. This is a very cool environment, universe, and a different take on G.I. Joe. And it's something that really gives an opportunity to delve into characters that just haven't had that. You know, we haven't seen characters kind of displayed this way before, and it's just really cool. The, you know, all of the dynamics between the different factions are interesting. You know, Cobra is not the organization that you know it as being. It's probably even darker and more sinister. You've got, you know, like you said, you've got Mars operating, which we've seen glimpses of Destro, but we haven't really seen what that is about and what his agenda is, because he is just supplying everybody with weapons, it would appear. Obviously, the G.I. Joe are this kind of underground rebellious force. You've got the Dreadnoughts as well, which are, again, this completely different kind of group. It's really interesting, guys. It's really fun, and it's just really well done on all counts, art, writing, coloring, everything. So check
it
out.
Thank you so
brilliant.
Much.
No, it's brilliant.
Yeah,
it's
no, I appreciate you saying that, because like, I'm very proud of it. I think that we're doing something really awesome here. I think it's a really fun book, but like I'm not great at like promoting myself. I'm not the guy who's gonna be comfortable like coming out there and being like, this is the best
it's
book
the
ever,
best
you gotta check it out.
Ever.
So like, yeah, like a lot of comics writers are really good at that, and I kind of envy them. So, but yeah, so I appreciate having you be able to say those things so that I don't have to.
Paul, thank you so much, mate, for jumping on and chatting with me about the comic. Like I said, again, really loving it.
No
and
problem. Sorry, I'm just here laughing at a joke that you're editing out.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And I'll leave that in. That's fine.
Okay.
thank you so much, mate, for coming on. I really appreciate it.
No problem, man.
Actually, before you go, where can people follow you? And I don't mean like, you know, stalking you outside your house or your bedroom or something.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Paul Aller, where I post a lot of that's probably the best place to get like little sneak peeks and different things. And when we run that contest in issue 8, that's probably where we're going to run it. And also, like, if you ever want to ask me a question about the book, about, you know, what we were thinking in a particular aspect, about what's coming up,
what were
Twitter
you
is
thinking, that kind of
yeah,
thing.
Exactly,
yeah,
exactly. Yes, absolutely. Twitter is the best place to reach out. I'm very accessible there, so, you know, feel free to reach out to me. You can follow me on Facebook, but I don't use it as much. So, and you know, it's Facebook.
And his cell phone number is
exactly. And you can follow me on Instagram if you want to see pictures of my dog.
Oh, I wonder what you're going to say then. I'm glad you said dog. But also, big shout to Shorty. He's absolutely adorable. Yeah, check him out on Instagram, dude. Thank you so much. That's it for this installment of the Full Forks. Full Forks. I said Full Forks. The Full Force Comics Burst. Forks are different. Thank you to my awesome guest, Paul Aller. See you next time, and as always, all hail mighty Cobra. I mean, Thought Force. Make sure you get involved with the discussion by liking, sharing, and commenting on these videos. And as always, you can keep up with the show after listening by following on Twitter at The Full Force, liking the Facebook page, facebook.com/The Full Force. And if you would like to contact the show, you can message us on either of those platforms with feedback or questions. We have also started a Patreon page, so if you want to see your name up in lights on these videos or enjoy exclusive bonus content, then check out patreon.com/The Full Force Podcast or click the link on any of the posts this podcast appears in. Full Force. And a big shout out to our sponsors, Distant Planet Comics and Collectibles, located at 601 Business Loop 70 West Suite 263, located in the Parkade Center, Columbia, Missouri. You can visit their website at distantplanetcomics.com and on Facebook at facebook.com/distantplanetcomics.